Area 7 by Matthew Riley. Read by Stephen Pacey. It had been his last request to watch the inauguration ceremony on television. Sure, it had delayed the trip to Terre Haute by an hour, but then, so the powers that be at Leavenworth had reckoned, the condemned man's last request was reasonable. The television threw a flickering glow onto the concrete walls of the holding cell, and a voice came from its speakers. "Do solemnly swear that I will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States." And then, despite the fact that he had less than 2 hours to live, the condemned prisoner smiled. He was 59, with a round, weather-beaten face and slicked-down black hair. Despite his age, he was a big man, powerfully built, with a bull neck and broad shoulders. His eyes were a bottomless, unreadable black, and they glistened with intelligence. He'd been born in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and when he spoke, his accent was strong. The number on his prison shirt read T77. Until recently, he'd been a resident of T-Wing, that section of Leavenworth devoted to inmates who are not safe among the general prison population. But within minutes, he would be flown out to Terre Haute Federal Penitentiary in Indiana for execution by lethal injection. A former Civil War fort, Leavenworth is a maximum security federal prison. This means it receives only those offenders who break federal laws, a class of individuals that includes foreign spies or terrorists, organized crime bosses, and members of the US armed forces who commit crimes. It's also perhaps the most brutal penitentiary in America. But in that peculiar way of prisons the world over, its inhabitants, men who have themselves killed or raped, have, over the years, developed a strange sense of justice. Serial rapists are themselves violated on a daily basis. Army deserters are beaten regularly, or worse, branded on their foreheads with the letter D. Foreign spies and terrorists have been known to lose body parts. But by far the most ferocious treatment is reserved for traitors. Traitors are usually killed within their first 3 days in the pen. Ostensibly, prisoner T77 was in Leavenworth for ordering the murder of two Navy officers. However, the fact that the officers had been advisers to the Joint Chiefs of Staff elevated his crime to high treason. That, and his own previous high ranking, had earned him a place in T-Wing. But even in T-Wing, a man isn't entirely safe. T-77 had been beaten several times during his short residency there, on two occasions so severely that he'd required blood transfusions. In his former life, his name had been Charles Sampson Russell, and he'd been a 3-star lieutenant general in the United States Air Force, call sign Caesar. He had a certified IQ of 182, and he'd been a brilliant officer, methodical and razor sharp, but most of all, patient, Caesar thought now. The two men on the screen, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court and the President-elect, were finishing their duet. They stood in grey, wintry sunshine on the west portico of the Capitol building. The new president had his hand on a Bible. "And will, to the best of my ability, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States, so help me God." 15 years he had waited, Caesar thought, and now, at last, it had happened. It hadn't been easy. There'd been several false starts, including one who had made it as a vice presidential candidate, only to lose in a landslide. 4 others had made it to the New Hampshire primary, then failed. But now, he had one. His theory had been born out of a very simple fact. For the last 40 years, every American president, bar one, has hailed from 2 very elite clubs, state governors and federal senators. George Bush was the only exception. He was a member of the House of Representatives. But, as General Charles Russell had also discovered, men of influence were also men of extremely unpredictable health. The ravages of their political lifestyles, high stress, constant travel, chronic lack of exercise, often took a great toll on their bodies. And while getting the transmitter onto the heart of a sitting president was nigh on impossible, getting it onto a man's coronary muscle before he became president wasn't out of the question. Because, after all,